Accession number 17623, Henry Watson, Reel 4.
Mr. Watson, Reel 10. You made the radio. Can you take me through how you made it and what you used?
Yes. I had to make the first of all, the amplifier was the equivalent of an LF stage on a radio. That's the voice part. Now, the bit that was missing was the HF, the high frequency piece, which collects the waves, the radio waves. So we had that to make. So I went into the compound where they kept the Red Cross parcels, and the major there, Sergeant Major there actually, he lived in the office with the other senior NCOs. He gave us some thin, highly polished tin that the medical parcels, the Red Cross medical parcels, had been sent in. And I cut out the vanes of a condenser. And when the bugler wasn't looking, I got a little brass strip off his bugle, nicked it off, and took that away with us. And then I went into the, when the band was playing sometime, or the violins, I went into a violin case and I nicked a piece of resin. Now those were stolen. So I made a tuning condenser and a reaction condenser. And I made those. Now then, the little bit of brass and a copper coin was what I made the soldering iron out of. And the flux was what I used instead of spirituous salts. And the solder I melted from the joints of these big silver big tins, melted them at the fire till I got the solder to run, and then collected it and had myself a stick of solder. I'd soldered everything together. The wire, well, at the time I was working in the theatre, if you can call it a theatre, where the blokes were doing shows, and I had access to a little bit of wire here and there, so that's where my wire came from, to build the set with. And we built it and played on with it. The microphone became the earphone, and we got an old Italian valve. Simmer would buy it. I don't know how he would get a hold of it, but it was a triode valve for the ones that really want to go into it deeply. It was a triode valve with an amplification factor of 5. And yet it roped in the BBC. That was the high tension side. So we got it working, got it plugged in, put it through through the amplifier, and then we just sat and listened with the earphone, which was the microphone, sat and listened to the, and then Simo and I were took turns of writing bits down, you know, the spicy bits of what had happened. The war program, you know. So we kept it pretty dark, kept it very secret. And there was a few knew, so we used to go and tell our mates the next morning. We used to get it at night after curfew. And once or twice I had to dodge a bullet. It was coming my way. I didn't see it, but I knew it was there when I heard the bang and it passed.
How did that happen? When you say you have to dodge a bullet?
Well, one of the silly guards had seen me moving about after lights out when I wasn't supposed to be out. And, Alti, that's your knee, bang.
Where did you get the power from?
For the
set.
Well, it was a mains, what do you call it? A mains set. This is that in the high tension stage. I haven't got it. I could show you a photograph of it. It's at Yon End, at Durham. We've got it off the mains, anyway, the power for the...
How did you get into mains to bring the power in?
Just the plug.
A usual type plug.
Uh-huh.
And they never sussed it? They never discovered
it? No, because I did it in the company office. And I kept it. We had a stool with a false bottom. And he said, put it in, put the bottom up, put the little buttons over. And they used that stool all day in the company office. The eye ties were in and out all day using the stool, but that was, they weren't using the bit that was underneath. Actually, there was one night we were working away merrily, taking the news down, and we heard some talking on the other side of a ground sheet, if you please, just a ground sheet. There was the company staff. The HQ company staff were in this little room, you see, in a strange voice. And there was this ground sheet, similar one eye, and I had a little peep. Here's a captain, Italian captain, sitting blathering away to them merrily. I said, for God's sake, just keep going, but don't make it howl.
So, in effect, the office, the company office, was your radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And you took it. What did you do with the information? Did you spread it out into the camp? Or?
Just two or three of your friends. And what happened was that the eye ties packed in eventually, and we turned the set up, you see, a bit more power, and used the one of the speakers to speak to give the news out, whatever. And the Germans took over the camp, you see. And we were going round the compound, Simo and I, and there was one or two of the lads talking to a German guard. And he was telling them that what a state England was in. They'd sunk the lot, you see. There's just a little bit sticking up here and there. And because they were given a mouthful of abuse by the soldiers concerned, you know, told them in no certain terms that we weren't exactly stupid. We had a radio in here. So I says to Sim, I says, oh my God, I says, if we get shifted, which we will, I says, then we can build another. We've got to keep it dark. We did get shifted. We did build another. We did keep it dark. And I've still got it, and it still plays. I'll let you see that another time.
We'll come to that story. Can we concentrate still in the Italian camp? You've got this radio going. The organisation of the camp, how was discipline organised within the camp, within the men themselves?
Well, you had the group commander, but he more or less made the tour of the line. There was always a threat of right to the Red Cross or report them when they get back into their army life.
What was the commandant like? Was he a...
An old man. I think he'd been in the First World War. I think he'd been on the war side.
But he was okay. He treated you okay, did he?
So he treated us all right, yes. The eye ties weren't so bad if they didn't get a hold of you. How can I put it? If they got you down, they would grind the heel in. But if you could stand up to them, they backed off. So we just naturally we just kept at them. Or for amusement, we had there again. We had the same thing as we had in 4B. In there, the classes. Just about anything you wanted to learn, there was someone there could teach you. And then boxing. Used to have boxing classes and fights, big fight nights, and it was always in the dark, but I had the lights rigged up, red light off a switch, and the green light off a switch, for the red or the blue rather, red and blue. You see, was which one had won the fight, amateur fighting. Now, with it being dark and fighting, the boxing, you need a bit of light. So I got some of these tin sheets, highly polished tin, that about that square, cube, full of parcels.
About 2.5 feet.
Yeah.
Square.
So I got four of those, like that, make like a
pyramid.
Pyramid. And got a piece of wood in the middle, and got some bull boulders in. So I was able to get these by having worked in the theatre, the camp theatre. I want some more bull boulders, you see, so that I used to give you a few more bull boulders. And I rigged it up with 450-watt bulbs in. Now then, the voltage in the camp was 140, low power. And it was poor, the lights. The wire was all aluminium, and the insulation was just a wind of paper. That's all it was. Well, I made this light, and I put a lead across to the boxing ring, and lit it up. A nice poor light, you know. The Italians thought it was quite nice. Until the first fight came out, and I had this little stepladder that I'd knocked together. The wire was three-phase wiring, but all exposed. Aluminium wrapped with paper. And I just tapped one wire onto one line in the neutral. So when, as soon as the fight was going to start, I took the bottom wire off and I put it across the mains. So I had 120 plus 120, 240. I put 240 volts through 110 volt bulbs. And believe me, brother, I had a light. It was brilliant. And the eyes couldn't understand how I got that power up that high, because they could never get that much light. And I don't tell them that that's what it was. It was wired across, right across the three phases.
So you must have had a reputation in the camp as being able to do all these clever things, in a sense.
Well, I wouldn't know about any reputation. I used to do a lot of funny things, but
do you remember anything else that you made that stands in your mind that was of great use to you?
Oh, I made utensils, mugs, plates.
And these were made out of what?
Tin.
That would come in with what, parcels or what
yeah,
have you?
Yeah, yes. There was a crowd of fellows called the Tin Bashers. And they used to get in the place where you got washed, Abolutions. And they used to get these tins, the food tins. Get the food tins and open them out flat, cut the edges off, you know, get them really cleaned up, and then they used to start with a lump of wood, tin bashing. Well, they're always horrendous. They used to make all sorts of things, really good, clever things. Clocks. One fella made a clock, another one made a, which I got wrong, he made a submarine. And he put it put a gramophone spring in it, a gramophone mechanism in it, a big submarine, and it took it down to a pond down at the, this was in Italy, in Germany rather, this one. It was going good, propeller and everything going along the bottom, but he didn't know how he was going to make it sink. So I said to him, well, if you put a blister on each side of it and put a hole just above the water line at the front, when it drives forward, I says, and this will be picked up with a little blade, I says, the water will pick up, and it'll pick up it there, and it'll go up into the blister, and it'll, the more, the farther it goes, the better it'll sink. Grand, yes. But he wound it up, and he put it in, away it went, and oh, it went down a tree. Next thing I saw was the next day he was plunging about in this bloody pond looking for it. It still hadn't come up. So I got wrong for that.
And this must have been quite a trade that was going on right across the camp.
Oh, yes, yes. There were some clever fellows with the tin bashing. They made some grand things. I was just thinking, I've got nothing at the moment.
Was there a black market working in the camp?
Yes.
How did that function?
Well, if you had plenty cigarettes and coffee, I think the biggest thing you could buy was a Tiger tank.
Anything, basically?
Anything.
And that was from the Italians themselves, was it?
Czech. This is from Four Bay. Sorry, this is in Germany.
If we can stick to the Italian one just for the time being.
With Italians, no, I don't think there was a black market going in the Italian one. We hadn't quite got the know-how. And the Itais had nothing to flog you anyway. They were a hard-up lot.
Did you get to work outside of the camp in Italy, or were you confined to the camp?
No, in the camp. Everybody was. I don't think there was any working parties went out from Italy. The only time I got outside the wire was to help me get hold of stuff to keep the radio thing going. I called myself an electrogisti, electrician, and Eddie Tiberi, the Italian, he didn't speak much English, and I spoke half as much Italian, and what we managed to get along, he'd tell us what he wanted, and I used to help him. It was just a skive, really. But one of the things you had to remember was, if you could get yourself a job in Italy, group commander was one job. You got a double loaf for all your pains. Well, it wasn't worth it, like a little bit extra bread about that day. But that was your reward, a double loaf every day. And I got a double loaf because I was a group commander. I didn't get any more for being working as an electrician. But that gave us access into a little bit of electrical equipment, you see. And there's one or two bits of things walked somehow or other. I don't think there was anybody worked outside the camp at all.
Did each day start with a parade and a count?
No, roll call. We had the goat, and you're in 50s, and the officer came around, and you saluted an officer, but being English, he just never saluted because he never wore a cap. So I'm going to salute Itais. So there's no one ever wore a cap. And he just pulled them to attention, your group to attention, you know, 24 group shot, and all that was it. And tell them it was 24 on parade, 48 on parade, 2 in the cookhouse. That was your 50, you see. Or there's 26 on parade, and 2 in the were sick, and the little light eyes used to be shooting at the back. 51! So many cucina, so many cooks. Due cucina, two cooks. Three ill. Tria malata, three ill. And that had to add up to 50. And they went right across the lot, did them all, and then did his totals up. And then he dismissed us. That was two a day, one in the morning, the other at night.
Did you do anything to try and knock up the arrangements, you know, to annoy them, or?
Not really.
To play them up?
Not really, he just behaved in a rather slovenly manner. Until the Italians packed in, and they were all just standing around, and a guard's RSM took all the guards out onto the parade square, and he showed them how to perform. It was an object lesson to us all, really. But he's smart.
And the Italians and yourselves were all watching this?
Oh, yes, we were all. The Italians used to stand.
Mouths
open. We didn't think that the human body could do that, you know. It could be timed to be the same.
The camp, you say, was surrounded with wire. Was there any attempts to escape?
Yes. One that I know of. There was two lads. They got out. They got out through an excess water tunnel, like a flood water. They got out. They managed to break the seal off at the other end, and they got out. But I think they turned three quarters of the Italian army that was in Italy out to catch them. Oh my God. There was double H on. Everybody got it in the neck round that time. Eventually they brought them back. They were unrecognizable, they'd been hammered that much. And the handcuffed leg irons. Oh, you think you'll bring in tigers and something in. They were highly jubilant that they'd got them. I don't know what it had cost, but it must have cost somebody for the army alone, for the time they were out and the time they spent hunting for these two gadgets.
Did it anger you to see men treading that way when they were caught?
Yes, yes. There's no need for it. That's why I hate Germans, because I didn't see Buchenwald, I was close, but I know all about it and seen the films and what have you. And I've lost one or two friends through that, but never mind. I dislike them, always will dislike them, and there's nothing that'll convince us otherwise, and that's it. End of the story on that.
How long were you held before the first of the Red Cross parcels arrived?
I'll be in the camp. We're in Italy about a year altogether, and I think we'd be in nearly 6 months before any Red Cross parcels came. I think that, I can't quite remember. It might have been less, because I know they shared out one parcel amongst 10 of us, I think it was, in Brindisi, in a little, where they held us just for a day or two. So they had them in Italy.
Did they didn't try to interfere with the parcels, did they?
Yes, they did.
In what way?
They tore every label off they could find, because they reckoned that once over they'd taken some labels off and there was the maps of the area. Now whether there was or whether there wasn't, I would never know. But then one or two have broken out from the camps, different camps, you know. We had two out that I know of. And, because they had grub with them, you see. So the parcel was all tipped out when you went for your parcel. It was worn between worn between seven, I think, because that meant that you got one each day, you see. And every tin was opened, was spiked. They put a spiked all the way into every tin. I mean, you've got yourself a nice tin of Irish stew or something, you see, and had a hole in it. You're right, you get this warmed up, you warm it up, and it's such a scratch to get a bit of wood, to get a fire going. And then when you open it, it was a tin of bloody jam. I there came and spoilt things with that.
How often did you get them?
Trying to think. Well, if you did get them, you would all, you know, constant. It was a parcel and 50 cigarettes. That was supposed to be the ration. Well, it never was. Your journey just in Italy, it was 25 cigarettes was the most you got. And you might do a 7-week stunt on right through, and then again you might not.
What kind of things might a parcel have in it? You've mentioned cigarettes. What else might be there?
Well, the cigarettes weren't in the parcel for starters. They were separate. In a parcel, there was two kinds of parcels used to come into the camps, American and British. Now, the American parcels were all the same, never varied. But the British, there was the different towns that used to put them up, and they all had their own little, well, menu, if you like. They put the same in every time. But what you got from Perth was one, to Bermondsey was another one that I remember. They were different. Basically the same, but with just differences here and there. What did you get? Well, you would get a tin of margarine, a little tin of margarine. A tin of a couple of tins of meat, about the half pound size. Sometimes a tin of cheese, little flat tin. Sometimes a little flat tin of dried egg. Some biscuits. Tea, sugar, or coffee. One thing didn't like, used to reckon was a waste of a tin, diced celery, which we didn't like. That was a waste of time. It was a waste of a good tin. It could have been meat. Celery, diced carrots, diced mixed veg, milk was dried milk. And it was called Clem milk, which is milk spelt the wrong way around.
Did you have, in effect, a nice meal, one big meal out of all this, or did you try to spread it out?
No, you spread it out. You had to make it last a week.
Were you able to barter in the sense that someone might have something that they didn't like and you could exchange?
Uh-huh. There was a bar of soap, you see. Well, some fellas didn't need soap. They were spotless. You must be joking. And they used to flog the soap. They got about 2 cigarettes, I think, for a bar of soap. You could buy on the market, if you could find the market. People would accept currency for certain things. Especially in Germany, there was a price for everything.
Were you allowed to have parcels from home?
Yes, if you were lucky. I had one in Italy and that was all I had. You could also get cigarettes from home. My mother used to send us, I was smoking then, my mother used to send us 1,000 a week. Well, that takes a bit of getting rid of 1,000 a week. But all the time I was in Italy, I was in there a year. I didn't get any. I got one clothing parcel, you know, with pairs of socks, shirt, vest, something like that. I got a clothing parcel in Italy. And she used to send us one of those away every, I think it was every other month.
So they were going astray?
Oh, they're all going astray. When I was getting the cigarettes from in Germany, my mum was sending us a thousand a week, and different friends were sending us. I only ever once got 1,000, and once I got a packet of 200. That was what I got.